This is Booktown. You're new here, aren't you? Maybe I should show you around. You can get anything you want here. Anything you want. Anything you desire. Anything you can imagine. It's all here. It's all free. It's all for you. Come on. I'll show you around. If you've got the guts. This is Booktown. You can get anything you want here. Anything you need. This is Booktown on KVMR FM, Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome, and I'll be with you for the next 55 minutes talking about a number of important and very exciting literary events in this area and beyond. I guess the most exciting for many of us is that Dale Pendel, after 15 years, has finished his three-volume work on... Well, how would you describe the overall work? It has three different
things. Psychoactive plants.
Psychoactive plants. Well, welcome to the program, Dale, and I'd like to talk about these three volumes. You started out, 15 years ago with Pharmacopoeia. How did you get going on this, and why did you call it that?
The project was an old idea, a vision from the streets of Berkeley, actually. The original vision was going to be a poet's guide to drugs. And as a conceptual art piece, by sampling them all, a certain process of immersion, that something in my style, a signature of the plant, could come through in my style beyond what I could think of writing. And it kind of went on a back shelf for years and years. Some of the impetus to actually do the project was the war on drugs. Even the word drug was wrong. It was used to refer to specific illicit drugs. It was demonized. People didn't recognize that we take drugs all the time. We take psychoactive plants all the time. The stimulants are psychoactive plants. We take pharmaceuticals all the time. And the word itself was so demonized that even mentioning, saying anything about drugs other than just say no, was grounds for summary dismissal. And many of us ended up going along with that. Maybe we were involved in political struggles on ecological issues, on other important political things, and nobody wanted the D word to come up because it would hurt the cause. I think this strategy backfired. Since the 80s, the federal prison population has tripled. 80% of that increase is drug prisoners. In a number of states, none of these people are allowed to vote. California has built 25 new prisons and only one new university. In Florida, a third of the black male population can't vote. the political consequences of those 100,000 votes should be clear. So my project was through a literary venue to open that discussion up again, to try and look at psychoactive plants from a traditional framework as plant teachers.
And you also said you wanted this to come through your style, and it is very much in your style. And for people who aren't familiar with your poetry, well, your poetry actually takes a number of styles, but one of the ones that I associate most completely with you is similar to the book in that it is, it jumps around, it circles around a topic, bringing in references from other people, lots of quotes, lots of illustrations from places you might not have expected, a combination sometimes of philosophy, psychology, economics, poetics, and the like, somewhat like...
And science.
And science, and a lot of science, a lot like the whale chapters in Moby Dick, or some of Ezra Pound's cantos, or Patterson.
And yes, quite so. That that was an inspiration.
And Patterson by William Carlos Williams, mm-hmm, if mm-hmm. people aren't
and
familiar.
And some of the playfulness of John Dos Passos, QSA.
And so in a way, I would say that the book perhaps almost wrote itself once you started experimenting, because it just, it's the way you write, or one of the major ways you write, and it just seemed to flow out.
Yes, well, I ran out of ideas very early on, and depended on the plant allies to give me words in tight corners.
And they did. They gave you...
Thank you.
What you started out with planning two volumes has wound up as three.
And that was just planned to be one volume.
Oh, it was originally
one
volume.
It was just going to be one book, and it's just turned out to be a rather larger subject, a rather larger project than I had initially budgeted for. And some of the plants got a little bossy and wanted more time for themselves.
Which ones?
Some of the stimulants and some of the more addictive plants.
Yeah, I was looking through trying to find if there was one major plant or drug for each book, and there isn't. But certainly in the second volume, things related to caffeine hold a center.
The second volume is primarily about the stimulants, though the last third of the book covers what I call the empathogens, like MDMA and maybe nutmeg, maybe GHB. Those are all in there. But the stimulants turned out to be a huge story. That's the story of our culture for the last several hundred years.
Although along the way you include, I believe in the first volume, fossil fuels as one of the main... one of the main drugs in that situation, although the first ones are the sort of inebriants and you say the thanatopathia, the ones tasting of death, and the sensually pleasing ones, tobacco, alcohol, marijuana. But along the way, is it in that one that you have? No, I guess I'm wrong.
The inebriants and alcohol, close enough to a plant, comes from yeast. And the part used, of course, is the excrement.
Right. And I guess that was not, I was wrong, that's not where the fossil fuels are. But in the latest volume, you even have the cereal grains as one of the major if we don't want to use the word drug, maybe we could say pharmacons?
Pharmacons, quite so. It's called the hallucinogenic properties of maize. And, I mean, if you want to talk about a world-class, great psychoactive plant, you can look at corn and rice, which keep a third of the world's population from starving every day and support Well, the how taken is through ingestion, effects, triggers massive physiological response, quite pleasurable, sustaining a complex chain of reactions involving adenosine triphosphate, and supporting, ultimately, a very grand hallucination where things like boson and lepton fields, electromagnetic waves seem to be physical solid space, and we experience it as color. We even experience the experiencer as a self. If that's not hallucination, what is?
But that's not their main purpose. Most of these drugs...
plants have their own purposes beyond what we know. Some think they're really calling the shots in this whole thing, and they have us do all this stuff for them, you know, like spread their seeds around and plant them, and that there's a struggle. There's a war of plants trying to gain an occult control continent by continent.
That's sort of the point of view that Michael Pollan takes in The Botany of Desire, that plants are using people to move around. You do say in the section on fossil fuels that maybe the main purpose humans have had on Earth was returning all the carbons from underneath the ground.
Yeah, that's from an ecologist, Howard Odom. And yes, we're certainly doing everything we can to bring that about.
Now, in the final volume, though, you do get away a little bit from purely plant-based pharmacons, in that I would say maybe the central pharmacon in the third volume, it might be LSD.
Yeah, that has not been found in a plant yet. The same thing was true for many years of DMT. That was considered only a synthetic chemical. One of the things many of us ethnobotanists were looking for at the beginning of this were botanical sources of DMT, and we found them in spades. It's actually widespread in the plant kingdom. So the same still could happen with LSD, but even so, it's close enough related. It's a cousin, and I'm not a chauvinist on that issue.
Yeah. And I guess that when LSD was first discovered, I can't remember if it was in the very beginning when Hoffman first synthesized it, or maybe 10 or 15 years later, people were comparing its reactions, the reactions it induced, to those from rye ergots, I believe.
Although it's those derived from ergot. Yes. I got to see Albert Hoffman. I went to, I was honored to be part of the symposium held last month to honor Albert Hoffman's 100th birthday in Basel. I mean, 100 years old, the man has a right to walk with a couple of cranes, with, I'm sorry, canes, but his voice was strong, mind clear. It was a wonderful event.
You emphasize in the book the benefits, but also very strongly the dangers of using various pharmacons, and you refer several times to the poison path, and especially in the latest volume, Pharmacognosis, it's plant teachers and the poison path. You said the drug was a very loaded word. What about poison?
Poison's very, yes. That was trying to turn things upside down just for a minute to give it a fresh look. The word is connected. It has ancient shamanic use that way. There were California Indian tribes where their word for the plant ally, their helping spirits could be, come, my poisons, come. And in the word pharmakon, of course, which means literally either poison or remedy. It depends on the context. Paracelsus said it all depends on the dose. So I was trying to click in a little warning there, and also to look what we use as medicines have that poisonous quality. What's chemotherapy? You poison yourself as close to you can, as completely as you can, without killing yourself, in order to be healed. Now, some of these plants, from a health standpoint, from a purely physiological standpoint, are among the most amazingly safe substances that we know of. There's no death recorded from marijuana. Nobody knows what the LD50, a toxic dose of LSD, might be. People have taken, you know, 1,000 hits at a time by accident and stayed high for a few days. Maybe they still see some trails or something, or they have a little sparkle about them, which they don't complain about. So from a purely physiological standpoint, they're amazingly safe as pharmaceuticals go, compared to almost anything else you would find in the PDR, the physician's desk reference. And yet, in another way, it's like a conceptual poison. It poisons, it has that ability to poison fixed modes of thought, which is why these things earn such veneration by the people who kept them.
Although I guess there is some danger. I'm trying to remember, Datura can be...
Oh my.
Dangerous.
Oh, that's a dangerous one. Very. In fact, that's probably... it's a principle. It may be the most common cause of plant poisoning among teenagers. I've got a number of cases in there of fatal ingestions. They go, well, I don't know, we couldn't find any marijuana, so we took Datura without knowing what they're doing. Yes, that's very dangerous.
And that's one that I've noticed growing around Nevada City.
I grow it myself.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Whereas the other one that I think could be fairly dangerous, and I guess this is questionable because there's so many ways of compounding it, are the components of ayahuasca. Has that ever led to physical injury or just to extreme mental confusion?
Ayahuasca comes out with an amazingly clean bill of health.
Mm-hmm.
Controlled studies with populations from the Unión de Vegetal and the Santo Daime churches in Brazil, where they drink ayahuasca a lot, twice a week or more often, and have done so for some years. Comparing them against controls, if anything, it's a healthier group.
Mm-hmm.
The beta-carboline alkaloids, the harmine and the harmaline in the vine, seem to be have a very cleansing property. Uh, I don't know of any health risk from ayahuasca that's been substantiated.
But of course, the most dangerous ones are the ones you list in your first book, tobacco and various alcohol forms.
Tobacco. 500,000 people a year in the United States alone. Yeah. So that's kind of the type. Poison. Clearly poisonous. Kills lots of people. And yet it's the most widely used shamanic plant in the world. Ayahuasqueros traditionally use tobacco all the time as their helper. They'll say that the vine will give them the visions and the light for the diagnoses, to see what the problem is, to see where the healing needs to come from. But the tobacco gives them the muscle for the cleaning. So we call it the poison path.
Yeah, when tobacco is used shamanically, you don't smoke 20 little tubes a day. You smoke the leaves in a controlled ceremony.
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I've seen ayahuasqueros, certainly when they're healing, when they're at work, they're smoking very strong tobacco more or less continuously.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them smoke pretty continuously.
Okay, because I was thinking that the main effect tobacco has is it has a very, you get familiarized with it and desensitized very quickly. And the effect it has that I think is shamanically valuable is the one that 12-year-old boys experience the first time they smoke a cigarette, of dizziness and confusion. But
yes, and that can go all the way to unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm. But that is used in a it's not just experienced, it's part of a path. But when you smoke again and again and again, pretty soon you're desensitized to those effects.
Yeah, Kat Harrison thinks that it needs, that the mindfulness is very important. Never to smoke from habit. It's used to clean something out. So you blow the smoke over somebody. You blow the smoke to the earth. You blow the smoke to the sky. You rub the smoke on your own body for the blessing. A tricky plant.
In the 15 years you've been working on these three volumes, you haven't supported yourself that way. You've been doing work in the computer business.
Yeah, I worked as a computer scientist. Most recently for Adobe Systems.
But you don't list computers among your pharmacons. Of course, they are not yet. They are not plant substances, but then neither is LSD.
Well, they certainly have that seductive quality. And all technology I talk about that someplace, technology as a pharmacon, and its power to seduce.
And you mentioned before we went on the air,
all of our machines tend to rule us. And we take our self-image from the primary machine. Like Freud looked at the human psyche like a steam engine. You can let off steam. There's pressure here, pressure there. And now, of course, we're looking at the psyche as a computer. Silly idea.
I think so, although it's helpful for the time being. It will be superseded, but right now I think it's got some benefits. But you said that you had seen studies that parts of the brain used playing certain computer games are similar to the parts of brain use under certain drugs.
Yeah, David Presti and I are investigating that. We've both noted from our own experience that seductive nature of computer games and I mean, I can see the behavior. It's like cocaine binging. And so recent studies have been finding that there is some pharmacological basis for that. Of course, the big thing they're investigating now are dopamine interactions. I think it's going to end up being much more complicated than that. And I'm a little, I don't know how useful neurotransmitters, looking at it strictly from the standpoint of neurotransmitters and receptors will be. But yeah, you can see the same sorts of behavior. Someone else walks into the room, you click off the game and put something else up on the screen. It's like hiding the pipe. And, yeah.
This is Booktown on KVMR-FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Thome. I've been talking for the past 25 minutes with Dale Pendel, author of Pharmacopoeia, Pharmacodynamis, or Dynamis, however you want to say it, and Pharmacognosis. These three books on the poison path, the pharmacon path.
On the poison path, and there's going to be a book party.
Right. That's the first one coming up is the book release party is going to be this Saturday, March 25th, at the North Columbia Schoolhouse Cultural Center at from 7 to 11 p.m. And books will be for sale there, and you get to talk with Dale Pendel at that time. He's also going to be upcoming on April 5th at City Lights with Robert Tindell and Susanna Bustos. They're going to be, the general topic is plants, practice, and song in Vegetalismo. And April 11th at the Booksmith in the Haight-Ashbury of San Francisco. April 14th at New College in San Francisco, a Baby Beats reunion reading. Saturday, April 15th at 5 p.m. at the Live Worms Gallery in North Beach. And finally, May 4th at Gateways in Santa Cruz. So you're going to be a busy person for the next month or so.
Going to be busy for a while.
And what are your future plans in writing?
Well, I've got a book in the works on Burning Man, the inspired madness of Burning Man gift. That should be fun.
That should be fun, and we're waiting for it. Thanks very much for being with us, Dale.
Thanks, Eric.
Guy walking down the road. Thank you.
This is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. After Dale Pendel and the world of Pharmacons, the poison path, we're turning to a totally different way of dealing with the world, Richard Stockton and Fondle the Fear. Welcome to Booktown, Richard.
Hey, thanks, Eric.
I think you actually came on this program when you first published the book about 3 years ago, but we've got a very different topic right now. The book, for people who may not have seen it, is basically a way of taking anything you are fearful of and, I guess, turning it into a positive outlook. The one that comes immediately to mind is, don't think you're in prison, think you're a member of a gated community.
Yeah. It's the idea, I guess, had in the beginning was based on the idea that our emotions, our behaviors, everything, it comes basically from love or fear. And if you're feeling fear, you have the power to turn it into a positive thing for yourself, into love. You know, I just got to say, I listened to Dale and you talking about that. I'm in awe of being around people who know more about drugs than I do. That was fascinating. And I just wanted to say I wanted to ask you something, Eric. He said that he was talking about writing. He ran out of ideas, and he found ideas with the help of Pharmacons. And you're a writer. And is that? Do you do that? Do you? I couldn't write a word at all. In fact, I have trouble negotiating a stop sign. You know, I'm waiting for it to turn green. I'm waiting for a light, the traffic light. What do these lights mean? What do they mean? Red means something. You know. So I was in awe that he could actually write. Because like this book, Fondle the Fear, man, I was straight as an arrow when I wrote it. I can't write when I'm loaded.
I guess different paths for different people.
Everybody's different, yeah.
What I should also point out, you just mentioned straight as an arrow, but what makes Fondle the Fear different from other self-help books and other positive outlook books is it's from the attitude of a stand-up comedian. And the book is on the right-hand pages about, 50 gags, which are mostly the sort of thing like the gated community one. And then those are on the left-hand page, excuse me. And then on the right-hand page, some of your personal experiences.
Yeah.
But now you could tell from looking at the book that you are a stand-up comic as well. You can also tell by the fact that you're appearing with Swami Vyondananda just coming up this Friday at the Miner's Foundry, and other things in the book. It's got you on a pogo stick on the cover, and you can flip the corners of the pages to see you do a little dance.
It's a flip book. Yeah, it's my first movie. Uh-huh. Fondle of Fear, first book, now the movie. It's in the book.
But now, it's not just the reason I've brought you back after 3 years is it's not just that, but you're turning it into a TV show.
Yes.
And I'm very curious about how you go about that.
Yeah. Well, I was performing a lot over in Santa Cruz, and a Comcast TV producer over there approached me and says, why don't you give us a TV show? Why don't you do a weekly TV show? So that was 18 months ago. And so for 18 months, I've been working on this deal. And the idea of turning these reframe jokes I do, and it's a cerebral mental thing you do. You know, I was born in Bakersfield, California. What possible advantage is there to being born in Bakersfield, California? I could go 230,000 people, six last names, you know. So these are all these cerebral jokes. Now, how do you turn that into a television show? Like my buddy, the Swami Vyondananda, says, tell a vision, you tell your vision. And television's about the picture, you know, it's about the tube. And so, fortunately, I'm a stand-up comic, they call me a visual comic, you know, because I'm real animated on stage, and I do characters.
And you wear red shirts.
I wear red shirts, yeah. And I wear the red shirt, right, I do. And I'll wear the red shirt Friday night. But to me, it was made in heaven. Like now I actually get to go out and act out the reframes. And so I was hanging around down in L.A. and everybody tells me, he said, hey, if you want a TV show that could blow up and really get distributed, it's got to be a reality show. And I don't even watch TV. I mean, I never watched TV, and I didn't even want to know what a reality show was. But I thought, well, I just on my own went, well, I'll go interview people on the street. There's the reality. So I'd get their fear. So this is what our show is about. Well, you saw it.
Yeah, and you stop people. It's always, at least as far, the four people I saw, you stopped them in the same spot in Santa Cruz.
I just stop people walking down the sidewalk. Hey, come talk to me. And interestingly, about 50% of the population will actually stop and talk to me on camera. And so then we ask them what they're afraid of.
The first one was afraid of yoga.
Was afraid of getting stuck in a yoga position. This young lady, yeah, Stephanie, was afraid of getting stuck in a yoga position. And so then the next step is to embrace that fear, for me to actually do it, to see if what would happen. So I got stuck in a downward dog position.
Which is pretty much like a...
Your hands and your toes are on the ground, and
right.
and your butt is in the air. Yes.
It's like the sort of sandwich board, not the kind that you carry, but the kind that you see on the street.
Yes.
And that's how you put it to use. You became a human...
I got a job as a sandwich board out in front of a jewelry store, and then I got Stephanie to come do the same thing. And we do a lot of comedy along the way. But that's the show. So we find out what their fear is, we experience, and then we try to find a way to turn that around for them to make it positive. Yeah.
But you intersperse that also with clips from your stand-up routine.
Well, that's interesting you said that, because before we did that, first we were just trying to do just that. And people would watch, and we'd screen it for people, and we always getting this, oh yeah, Richard, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's what a comic wants to hear. And so the producer finally said, Richard, put your stand-up in there, because that explains what it is. And so as soon as we started putting the reframe jokes in there from my stand-up act, you know, then all of a sudden everybody gets it. They go, oh yeah, I see what all this is about, you know. Yeah.
And there's other visuals that you throw in sort of at random here and there. Mm-hmm. Bits of the Hallelujah chorus. And
well, that's the reframe moment, and that's the one I came up with. I don't know, the Hallelujah chorus, it's just like this moment, ah yeah, bingo, we got it, we reframed it, you know. Yeah.
Before you started doing this TV show, you had been doing your stand-up act. You'd also been flogging your book. How did those tie together? Do people, when they go to see you as a comic, do they know that you've written this book? Do you talk about it?
Some people come to the show because of the book. Oh yeah, you know. But I mean, I'm not about selling things. I you know, product placement and really selling something is nothing part. Is not part of fondlethefear.com. You know, www.fondlethefear.com. I mean, I don't go there.
That's his P.O. box, by the way.
Yeah. And so I really based my act. I started basing my act on the book. And that's what I'll do. I'll be Fondling the Fear Friday night. Yeah. The Swami, of course, will be there with his State of the Universe address. And yeah.
But you also sell the book in bookstores, and you're not. Trying to, you say you're not about sales, but nonetheless, you've been, I'm sure you appreciate it when people buy the book.
Yeah.
And for the people who don't, I'm trying to think that you've got probably three worlds going. There's the bookstore audience, there's the comedy audience, and now there may be the TV audience. How do they interact?
Well, Thursday night, we at Gateways Books in Santa Cruz, we screened the TV show. Our pilot of Fondle the Fear, and they loved it. That's really my audience. I mean, the whole alternative healing. I mean, anybody can understand my act and get it. But I'm really finding the people who like the book, the alternative healing people, the empowerment crowd. They really, really appreciate it, because it's comic relief for the things that they're afraid of. Yeah.
Now, I've seen the first episode of the TV show, which is about a half an hour. I didn't time it. And the procedure works very well. You pull in half a dozen people with various fears, mm-hmm. some of them fairly minor that you get rid of in about 90 seconds. Some of them take a lot longer to deal with.
Right.
But is that what you're planning to do continuously? You're just going to keep finding people on the street?
Oh, yeah. We've got people, you know, afraid of public speaking. We've got people afraid of curled hair. I mean, anything that people are genuinely afraid of, we're going to go for. Well, like the kelp guy, the surfer.
I was thinking when I first introduced Richard to Dale Pendel at the beginning of the program that he almost exemplified the perfect human pharmacon. Instead of being the green plant man, he was the brown plant man coming out of the waves at the Santa Cruz beach.
Wow, that was, yeah. So to tell everybody what's going on, there's a surfer down in Santa Cruz, and he's afraid of getting tangled up in kelp in Monterey Bay because it's out there. I mean, it's like real, these kelp plantations out there. Well, I went out in the bay, and I come back with 100 pounds of kelp. I mean, just this kelp monster, Kelpzilla is there. And I'm walking around Santa Cruz, and I meet some women, and they find me very intriguing because I have the kelp on. I mean, I'm turning into a chick magnet this way. And then I finally get a job in front of a health food store hawking their kelp products on the street. And so then the surfer split. He went to Weaverville, and it turned out he was gone.
No kelp in Weaverville.
I couldn't. There's no kelp. There's no surfer. It turned out I had a gig up there. I had a gig nearby, and I went to get him, and so I showed him the thing. And so he's going to come back to Santa Cruz and do Kelp Man. In a later episode, Kelp Man will return.
And we hope he'll be as successful as you were.
I think he's going to do it naked. He's going to do it full Monty. Boy, this guy's good. This guy is so good, man. So.
Except he's terrified of kelp.
He's terrified of kelp, but apparently not afraid of being naked, which is,
Now you say there's an inexhaustible fund of fears, but is there an inexhaustible fund of jokes that you can intersperse with them?
Absolutely.
Your routine is constantly evolving?
Oh, got to, yeah. Yeah, a comic will change. I try to change maybe 20% per year of my act. I mean, it's got to be real solid, so it takes time for the act to change. But, every year I'll change it. It'll be about a fifth different, and hopefully after 5 years it'll be a brand new act.
And you actually brought in a couple of clips. Now, these are, I can't remember, are these from the show?
Oh, these are from the show. These are from the show. Can we play one?
Yeah, let's give it a try.
On the road, falls into a hole in the ground, right? And the next day the guy walks down the road, sees the hole, walks around the hole. Third day the guy walks down the road, sees the hole, takes a different I say, that man's ready to work for Caltrans.
Yeah. That, so
here's more.
Oh, more. Yeah, play some more.
Yeah.
I'm Alan.
I'm attending Cabrillo College right now, and I will continue doing so for the next 2 years.
Yeah. Cabrillo? Absolutely. What are you studying over Cabrillo?
I'm studying psychology and sociology right now.
Ah, so later on you'll know why you're not employed.
Something else I'm afraid of besides George Bush. Lack of education. In California, for one.
California?
We are 49th, is that it? Out of 50 states?
49th in the nation.
The alarming condition of our public education is receiving national attention.
Sometimes when you don't measure, you just shuffle kids through. Then you wake up at the high school level and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
We could say California public education's 49th in the nation. Or we could say thank God for Alabama.
Woo-hoo! Oh, Alan's feeling it now. Up into the reframe.
Well, just one more.
My name is Carol Severson. I don't like the things that some white people have done over the history of this country.
Ah, we're beating ourselves up over being white.
Yes, yes.
I have portrayed many Caucasians myself, but by being able to play white, I got to play the hip-hop Abraham Lincoln on BET.
Mad props to Harriet Tubman. Oh, she's my dog. She got me hooked up with this whole freedom game. And Harriet, thanks for giving me these tickets to the theater.
Amazing thing about
it. So that's the deal. I mean, you know, that's it. If we've we need redemption. I mean, after 300 years of oppression, but like that's what Mark Twain gave us with Huckleberry Finn, you know, it's this like white redemption. And I'm just saying, like, it's time to look at ourselves, you know, it's okay. We can let it go. Look at me. I'm so white. I mean, from Bakersfield. I mean, how white does it get? And it was because I'm a...
And not only that, you play the banjo.
I play the banjo, Eric. And my gosh, so... But how else... I'm the world's greatest hip-hop banjo player. I may be the only hip-hop banjo player. But, you know, so how else could I have invented hip-hop banjo? If, you know, so it can be a great thing.
This is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I've been talking with Richard Stockton, author of Fondle the Fear, which he wrote when he was living in Nevada County. He's now splitting his time between Nevada County and Santa Cruz, where he's turned this into a television show. You finished the first, you've done three.
We got three in the can.
Three in the can.
We're still producing.
How many do you plan to do?
Forever. I want you on the show. We're going to fondle the fear, Eric. Come on.
Okay. And in the meantime, he's going to be coming, well, he is in town, and he's going to be appearing with Swami Vyandananda in a event called Join the Upwising, an event of comedy to help you wake up and wise up. That's going to be this Friday at the Miners Foundry at 8 p.m., Miners Foundry in Nevada City. I noticed you said you did one of your... you. Presented your book at Gateways in Santa Cruz,
yeah.
Which is also a place where Dale Pendel will be appearing on May 4th.
Wow.
So the two of you have, I imagine, more than you would have thought.
Great minds stumble around together. Look at that. Yeah.
So what are you, now you appear, how often do you appear with Swami Vyandananda? You've been here at least three or four times with him.
Yeah. We've done a lot of shows together. We do theaters. We go from all the, we start in Sedona and go all the way to Seattle. The Seattle to Sedona run. Yeah. And, we have a ball together. He's a good friend and he's, just done a lot for me, in turning me on to his audience, and hopefully I'm turning him on to, mine. Yeah.
So how many shows a year do you do?
Well, we got two planned for this spring, and this fall we got some more going. So, yeah. Actually, no, we got three planned for this spring. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Any more books planned? Or
yes, I just copyrighted my new title.
Okay.
Yeah. Women are from Starbucks, men are from Hooters. And it's all about the cup size. And I don't know, maybe in your bookstore someday.
You can't copyright titles.
No, but I mean, I've written some stuff. We have written.
But the material is copyright.
The material is copyrighted. Oh, you mean I can't copyright the title? Somebody else can use that title?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You've never seen Robert Benchley's books like A Tale of Two City or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. Kathy Acker's Don Quixote?
Wow.
No, their titles cannot be copyrighted, and sometimes this... The same titles used several times in the same year.
Well, there you go. It's a great title. Writers out there, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you afraid of, Eric?
Not having things to say.
I know.
Running out of questions on this program?
Running out of questions. Well, if I run out of answers and you run out of questions, yeah. We'll go to the book.
Fortunately, we're almost out of time, and before we finish, I would... like to, and before we make way for Jimmy Carty's Rock and Roll Party, right. I'd like to reiterate some of the appearances that Richard and Dale are going to be making, and other people as well. So you're going to be at the Miners Foundry this Friday with Swami Vyandananda.
Right.
And that's at 8 p.m. at the Miners Foundry in Nevada City. Any other appearances in this area?
Let's see. No, not coming up. Next fall we'll have some, but... It's going to be it for a while here in Nevada County.
Okay, and other things happening, as I mentioned, Dale Pendel will be at the North Columbia Schoolhouse Cultural Center on Saturday from 8 to 11. He'll also be at City Lights in San Francisco on April 5th, at the Booksmith in the Haight in San Francisco on April 11th, at the New College in San Francisco on the 14th, at Live Worms Gallery in North Beach on the 15th, and at Gateways in Santa Cruz on May 4th. And a couple of other people who are going to be appearing in Nevada County. The bookseller has two upcoming events that Sharon Meddy, author of The Great Silent Grandmother Gathering, is going to be at the bookseller at 2 p.m. Sunday. So you've got 3 days in a row. You can see Richard Dale and then The Silent Grandmother Gathering. That's at 2 p.m. on Sunday the 26th. And on the 1st of April, Chris Enns, who is author of many books, but most recently, The Doctor Wore Petticoats and How the West Was Won, will also be appearing at the bookseller at 3 o'clock on April 1st. Barry Lopez, author of Wolves and Men, Arctic Dreams, and many other books, is going to be Thursday, March 30th at the Waxon Auditorium at CSU Chico. That's going to be Thursday, March 30th at 7:30 p.m. So Jimmy Icardi is going to be here in just a minute or two. Any last thought, Richard?
Yes. Friday night I'm going to unveil my new program for success in the Middle East for the United States, particularly for Iraq. I've decided it's got to be statehood for Iraq. We've got to make it the 51st state. I think that's where we should go. Could you just imagine Nevada Union High School basketball team playing Baghdad High? I mean, it would be worth seeing the cheerleaders alone. These chicks out there with their burkas going back and forth. Oh, she's showing a little nose. Oh, no. Anyway, statehood for Iraq. That's what I'm saying.
And stay tuned for Jimmy Icardi's Rock and Roll Party.